Mike, long time.
Hi, Michelle.
Hey, Mike.
All right, I'm doing a rewatch here of the beginning of episode one. Hold on a second.
Yeah.
Welcome to the West Coast Project podcast for The Affair. That's the Showtime intro. And actually, I'm doing a rewatch, Michelle, of episode one to find out if they indicate Noah's version. And the very first thing he does is he dives into the pool and starts doing his laps and is swimming a couple laps. They have no sign yet of Noah, part one.
Okay. Well, that's interesting.
Hold on. Gonna give it a little more time. The little hottie comes in. With her crotch right at eye level.
Only a guy would see that.
Well, it's what she does.
Well, I know, but I mean...
Nope, absolutely no indication that this is his version. So they tricked us. They let it go, and then we see her version.
You're so smart. I didn't even catch that.
We're forced to, like, think back. Like, holy cow, what was different?
Okay.
But in episode two, they do say his version and her version.
Right.
Okay, so this is the West Coast Project podcast for episode two of The Affair. And another thing, Michelle, from Tennessee, is they don't have titles. They have one, two, three, and four. They don't have episode titles in this series.
Oh, that's interesting. That's good, though.
Yeah, it is kind of interesting. I wonder why. Just that's how it is, I guess.
Yeah, I don't know. But I'm telling you, the music, they got some pretty good music in this. What have you thought?
Yeah, so episode two, I didn't catch the theme of it, but it was something about sinking into the ocean. Did you look up the artist or the song or anything? Do you know what it is?
The ending song?
No, the beginning of episode two.
No, I didn't do the beginning. I did the ending song, but not the beginning.
Well, it's a cold open about water and splashing around, and it's beachy looking, and it's about sinking into the ocean and drowning. Maybe clue to the crime, maybe, or something. Hey.
Yeah.
And this time we do get the part one Noah very clearly stamped onto the beginning of the episode. After a recap of, you know, the earlier scenes. And with the detective, we see them right away this time together. Noah and the detective. Noah's jogging and he says, "I didn't know she was married. She just seemed lonely. She was bad news, and I went out of my way to avoid her."
Yeah, and then it shows him doing the exact opposite. So I'm wondering, is he telling one story, but then they're, or either one of them, both of them, but is he telling one story and then they're showing the truth?
Yeah, like maybe? True Detective did that. They showed the exact opposite.
Right, because that's exactly what they did in this. Because he says Allison seemed like the loneliest girl in the world, but in her version, she does. But in his version, the girl seems anything but lonely. She seems flirty and upbeat and,
Yeah. Then he tells the detective he wasn't thinking about her, but he jogs right up to her house in that shower location.
Yeah, and we see that shower scene, or the shower and the car stuck out pretty prominently in his mind.
That's not the only thing that stuck out. He was in the shower, his own shower, masturbating to her memory of watching her having sex with Cole.
Right.
Helen catches him and is promptly uninvited due to me time. They want to spend some me time.
Yeah. And she's very gracious. She doesn't let it hurt her feelings. She doesn't sulk about it or anything like that. She just says it used to be funner and kisses the outside of the shower and walks away.
She goes off to have sex with the pool boy.
Well, she did say she was going to at least go have a shower with the pool boy, so...
So later on, like a minute later, I guess, or 10 minutes later, Noah comes down to the kitchen and he needs Advil. That was unusual, a little unusual, didn't you think? Why do you need Advil first thing in the morning?
Only if you'd been drinking or something, but they didn't show that. I don't know.
So he does that, and they're all kind of having breakfast, and the jackass writer, the father-in-law, is playing chess with Trevor, and he's like, apparently playing chess with him and kicking his ass, and the, and Helen suggests that they let him win. What'd you
right
think about
in front
that?
Of him. Well, I don't think... that's not my parenting philosophy. So I don't really like let him win. But at the same time, to say it in front of the kid is like a horrible thing anyway. I mean, right. The kid would never know if he'd ever won anything at that point. Or if somebody was just like, well, what did you think?
I agree both. I think it's wrong to let the kid win. And I think it's wrong, doubly wrong, to let him win, to not let him win and... Or to let him win and talk about it in front of him.
Right.
So whatever, they've screwed it all up.
Oh, I know.
They're jackasses. So he's a jackass. And then the wife is a jackass, too. The old grandma.
Yeah.
She's worried about the espresso machine getting reprogrammed the wrong way. And
I know she won't let Noah use it.
He goes
over to make an espresso, and she won't allow him to use her espresso machine and calls him out in front of his family, even.
She's living in this mansion on Montauk. She's worried about her fucking espresso machine and the flowers weren't ordered properly. And it's all this freaking first world stuff. She's just hateable. I didn't like her at all.
Not right there. But
not ever.
I don't know. There's parts of her a little bit later on that I liked a little more. But we'll get into that.
And then so Noah gets pussy whipped into going and getting flowers at the freaking farmer's market. And we start to see some nagging between Noah and Helen. Like, do you know how many times you've told me that? You repeat things too. Like, they're picking at each other.
Yeah, I didn't see her picking at him. They just drove past the horse ranch, and the little kid's going, horsey, horsey, which kid would do. And she says, I used to ride there as a kid, and he's ugly to her. I mean, he's like, do you know how many times you've told me that? And I mean, that's unnecessary. Why would he do that? Why would
she interrupted a perfectly good vision of a girl having sex on a car while he's trying to masturbate in the shower.
To get in the shower with him?
Yeah, that you can't shift gears like that.
Okay. Do
just
not
telling you.
That.
I'm telling you. Okay, I'm being honest.
Okay, so the wife, what you're telling me is the wife shouldn't have interfered with his masturbatory fantasy.
She didn't know she was interfering. I'm just telling you why he's being cranky.
That's
I'm making a joke about it.
It's not reasonable. It's terrible. And she's being gracious. She's being nice to him still. Again, in his mind, or in his story, so...
Oh, you made me choke down my beer and laugh.
Sorry.
And plus, he doesn't have his Advil yet. He's cranky.
He got his Advil. They just moved it. Remember?
Well,
because
he didn't get it into play yet. You don't get it like a. He's not spiking it into his arm. He's taking a pill.
Well, the grandmother has had a efficiency? What was it? An organizational expert
Jesus.
Or something?
Yeah.
And she was
rearranged
worth every
kitchen.
Penny. She got years of my life. I mean, it's like, what is she talking about? How could you? First of all, she has somebody else in the kitchen doing her work. And how could that have taken away years of her life to have the Advil on the opposite side of the refrigerator?
And plus, she looks like she's 100 years old. She doesn't look like she's rested and peaceful. She looks haggy. Anyway, back to the show. They drive past the horse ranch, and Helen reminisces about the really nice woman who ran the ranch, and that was Mayor Winningham, right?
Right, Cherry,
She had four boys, one of which is Cole, so
right.
Start to see that connection getting redeveloped. And then we see Allison and Mary-Kate. Allison is the girl in the affair, and Mary-Kate is the sister-in-law of Allison, married to one of Cole's brothers.
Right.
They're selling jam at the farmer's market. Now, here's where some things start to get interesting, Michelle, because He buys a thing of jam that the little girl likes for $12. Remember that number? Right. $12.
I do. I know. On a single jar of like apple butter is what he buys.
And he tries to give her 20 and she says no and insists on giving him the change back. But I think that was a point to make us realize those numbers because $12.
I agree.
So she gives him the change back. So back at the horse ranch, Hal takes Stacy to meet the horses. Hal's the brother of Cole. He just happens to be working, I guess, at the front desk of the horse ranch.
Right.
Stacy's the little girl, and he takes her off to meet the horses. And Scotty, the other brother of Hal and Cole, takes the parents around just to show them around the ranch, I guess.
Right.
And Cole rides up on a horse. So there's three brothers there, Cole, Scotty, and Hal.
Right.
Martin is looking for a job for the summer. I guess they're going to be there like a month or, you know, like extended more than a week.
No, it's 3 months. He points out. Yeah. When he's talking to his son Trevor about reading, he's like, you got 3 months to, you know, whatever. So it was, yeah.
Okay, thanks. So all summer, yeah.
So who's the other brother? Do you know the other brother's name?
Yeah. Just,
okay. Hal and Scotty and Cole.
And Caleb.
Caleb, okay. I need to get these names straight. Okay.
So Cole rides up. Martin looking for a job. Martin's the son of Noah and Helen. Looking for a job, something to do. He's, you know, going to get bored over the summer. So Noah doesn't want him getting a job at this horse ranch of the husband family of the affair he's having. But Helen does. Helen thinks it's a great idea, and she talks him into it or asks him, come on, please. It's a great idea. He'll have a great time.
Well, right, but he doesn't realize this is her husband at this point. At this point, this is somebody who was accosting her.
Right.
So I'm going to give him the benefit of the doubt in this.
Okay.
I won't do that much, but I think that he might have seen it as a more sinister, even though she didn't react that way, I think he might have seen it a little more sinister than it turns out it actually was.
So Noah, the next scene, Noah's recounting with the detective, like, sitting on the beach, swimming, time's just kind of passing. His mother had just died. His father was drinking himself to death. His sister was slutting around with a Sherpa in Nepal, doing something in Nepal. So who do I even have in my life? And it's Helen.
Well, this was back when he graduated college.
Before he graduated, yeah. He was
right,
like,
when all this was going on,
he's
right?
Telling the
when
detective
his mother died.
He's telling the detective about his very young, right, troubled teenage time, yeah.
Right, okay. I want to make sure I had that right, that this was, the stuff he's telling had happened, you know, what, 20 years ago.
Right.
Okay.
So who do I even have? And it turns out Helen, they got married before he even graduated from college, they got married, and it made him into a man, is what he told the detective.
Yep.
So we jump back to real time, and Noah's kind of sitting at his computer with writer's block, and he's typing Allison over and over on a blank screen.
Yes, he was.
And so somehow it comes up that there's a party at the grandpa and grandma's house.
Well, yeah, Helen walks in. She brings him a sandwich. She's being all kind, and she brings him a sandwich, trying to pick out a dress to wear. He tells her he's just not inspired up there, that he's bored. And she's like, well, I'm going to try not to take that personally, and kind of jokes around with him and everything. And then, you know, we've already seen that they're going to have a party because the grandma was freaking out about it that morning, about not having the flowers. And so now Helen's trying to pick out a dress for the party. So I think we're kind of counting down to the party. Plus, when they had dropped Martin, right, that they dropped off at the horse farm, and they were saying, Noah was saying he can't stay because of the party that night. So evidently this party was like a big deal.
Yeah, so if you're listening to this podcast and you can't connect all these names, Martin is the older son. He's probably 15 or 16. Whitney is the older girl. She's probably 16 or 17 of Noah and Helen. And then they have a couple of littler kids too. So he's the older of the kids, and he's the boy, and he's looking for a job over the summer, and he's like interested in becoming a ranch hand at this horse ranch.
Right, and I don't think he's 16 yet because he's not driving, and they're having to get people to drive him. So I think he is younger than 16.
So he might be 15, but he's old enough. He's probably old enough to get a job at a horse ranch. It's not like he's a little kid. Like,
no, I'm guessing 14 would be my guess. If I were guessing 13, 14.
Right. So there's a party at the writer's house. Whitney is kind of sleazing around. Whitney's the teenage girl daughter, sleazing around with the dress that's inappropriate.
Yeah, what is up with that dress on a teenager?
I don't know. I mean, what do you do? What do you do? You make the kid go all the way back home and change the dress?
Well, the dress was at the house. It was at Bruce's house, Bruce Butler's house where they're staying.
Oh, right. The party is right there, I guess. Yeah.
And yeah, she takes her butt back inside and she puts some clothes on. She's a child and she's out there dressed like that. That was crazy. I was glad he called her on it.
Apparently, Whitney, the teeny girl of Noah and Helen, and Ruby are friends now. And they're about the same age, right? They're teeny boppers. She's a cute little black girl, and she's like drinking a scotch or something. And she, Noah says, "Put that drink down," and Ruby just says, "Apple juice," and she like downs it. But you know, it's like whiskey or something.
Well, yeah, but he points out, "You're 16. You can't drink."
Right.
So, I mean, we know that these kids are really young. We're not even talking about, you know, 20-year-olds or 19-year-olds. These are teenagers. So.
Right, but that's probably why they bonded so well. It's their, you know, Whitney and Ruby are the same age, in the same boat, essentially, right. Stuck at right. This dry-ass writer's house. So, Helen grabs Noah and says, come here, look at this, and... She drags him over to see the witchy woman, Teresa. Teresa is this witchy. She does look witchy. She's a woman, this is probably 50 or 60-year-old woman that had an affair with Grandpa earlier.
Yeah, the piano teacher.
Somehow she's made her way into the party. And it's affecting Helen way more than it affected Noah. But understandably.
Sure. Well, yeah, because, I mean, this is obviously, my take on it was that this was something that happened when she was younger. So she would have lived through this. Her piano teacher had an affair with her father that then really caused a lot of chaos in her house. So, of course, it would affect her more personally than it would her husband, who comes in years later.
Yeah. Yeah, there's a lot of anger built up in Helen about this woman being at this party. So, but there's another affair chick at the party, Michelle from Tennessee, and it's Allison. Allison is serving drinks.
Mm-hmm.
So that all transpires. Then Noah meets Harry, the writer's agent, via Bruce, the grandpa. Bruce, the grandpa, introduces Noah to Harry, who's his agent, his writing agent. And he actually tries to put in a good word for him. So you're right. He does show us a semblance of a good side here.
Well, kind of, but it's almost, I don't know, I took as very passive-aggressive, because he's talking about how people who wrote one book and are now bloggers with menial jobs, and he's going on about stuff like that, and he does introduce him to Harry, because he says he wants Harry to take him on, but then he puts him on the spot to talk about a book that he knows he hasn't even begun yet.
Yeah, but he's right about all that. There are bloggers that think they're artists that are just nothing more than blathering idiots on the internet.
Well,
and he is, and Noah is kind of lackadaisical, sitting around trying to figure out what to write. Oh, I'm in love with this girl. Just type her name 80 times in a row. He does try to get him off the dime and get him to get his ass in motion.
Yeah, but he's a grown man. And, I mean, does he really need that? Is that how he got his first book going, from somebody nagging him like that? And he's not talking about bloggers who think they're writers, necessarily, which, of course, some are. But he's talking about people who have written a book that then become nothing more than... I don't know. It's like he's poking at him the whole time.
Well,
Bruce
has any kind of a good side, this was it. I mean, he's trying to get Harry... He's trying to connect Noah with Harry, which would really help Noah's career. And he's being relatively friendly about it. He's like, come on, you got to take your shot when you have it. And here's a guy who can help you. And I don't know. I kind of looked a little bit fondly on Bruce for doing this.
Oh, I did not. I thought he was just being horrible. I thought he was being horrible. I thought he was saying, okay, this is my agent. You need to use him. You can't even pick the right agent. You need this guy. You're going to turn into nothing. I don't know. I just didn't take it well. I probably need to go back and rewatch it.
Well, like an angel from heaven, Allison shows up with whiskey.
Mm-hmm.
As the waitress of the party.
Yep.
And Bruce immediately insults her as a whore and Noah as a schmuck. So he has a good side, but it's a very minimal good side. Because he jumps right back into his old character. Bruce does.
But what did you think about Noah hasn't stood up to him about anything. Not about his daughter. Not about his writing, his career. Not when he's beaten his son at chess, but when he says something offensive about Allison, that's the first time we see him stand up against Bruce.
Well, he said, did you just call me a schmuck?
And her Allison a whore. Right. But it was like, that's what aggravated him. I mean, he's called him a schmuck without saying the words 500 times already.
Yeah.
But when he brought Allison into it,
He walked into eminent domain there, though. He is under his roof, and he does have to kind of abide by his rules as much as he hates them. But he is vacationing at his house. There's an element of that. So I think he's measuring his responses, and this kind of pushed him up to the limit and over the limit a little bit.
I just think it's funny what did, because you would think he would have had that strong of a reaction when they were questioning their parenting skills and that kind of thing more than calling some girl that he didn't even know. And he didn't call her a whore. I mean, he was very unflattering to her, but he didn't say that girl's a whore. He said if he were her and had an ass like that, he would try to get the attention of men too, or something to that effect. I mean, it's not like he said, I don't know.
It's the same thing.
It is the same thing, but I think it's funny the thing that he decided to call Bruce out on. That's all. I just thought it was worth noting.
So Noah looks for Allison in the house, and she's charging $20 to have sex with all the butlers in the house. Like a whore would. No, he doesn't. He finds Allison in the house, and she's smoking pot in the kitchen or off to the side. And we're watching Noah's reflection of this, remember? So she tempts him away to privately smoke pot behind the locked garden gate.
Right.
One thing that was hard for me to shift here was this day becoming night. Day became night in like a snap of a finger here. From the time they walked from the kitchen to the garden gate, it was dark and nighttime. And
right.
It was light when he walked into the kitchen.
Right.
But anyway, I don't know if that means anything, but they get through the gate and Allison runs into the water and they kind of sit on the beach and talk. And
okay, let me bring this up, because this is another thing that just completely rang untrue to me about his story. Allison lives on the beach. She lives in a beach house. She lives directly on the beach. And it was like as soon as he opened up that garden gate, she, you know, kicks off her shoes and she dances down to the water and she's throwing her arms around and she's dancing in the water like somebody would do if they don't visit the beach very often, and it's a novel thing to them. Not somebody who walks out their door with a breakfast sandwich in hand and has that to them. But he has her doing this sensual, moonlight, happy dance on the beach like she's never been to the beach or hasn't been to the beach in 5 years.
Well, remember a couple things, though. She is... It's his memory of her, and she is flirting with him, so she's kind of happy to be alone with him. She's also, like, off work now. She's just like, I punched out, I'm off work, which is kind of a euphoric feeling, like you're free to your own doings again.
Yeah, I know she was there for, like, 45 minutes.
I know, but still, you've finished your work shift, so you're kind of happy about that. You kick off your shoes, and I don't know, I'm not going to pick on that too much.
It just wasn't believable to me. For her as a beach liver, someone actually lived on the beach, I just I don't know. I don't believe his story. I don't believe she was doing that because it just doesn't ring true. But
all right. Well, that's your take. I accept it. They sit on the sand and talk for a little bit, and she advises him to forget the book, live a little, and get something to write about. You know, live some life so you have something to write about.
Yeah, and it's very suggestive.
Fool around so you have a chapter to write about.
Right, and she's running her fingers along his hand, and it's very sexual.
So he tries to defend his marriage, which I took as, like, guilt washing, almost like I'm He's talking to the detective, like he's recounting this. Like, mm-hmm. I'm defending my marriage. I wasn't really buying into this, but, you know, he was like kind of being dragged into it by her, according to him. But this is where he finds out that she's married to Cole, and the ranch is his family's ranch, and so that's their ranch, essentially, the horse ranch.
Well, right, because, you know, he says he's married, and she says, well, marriage means different things to different people, very suggestively to him, and he says not to him it doesn't, and then he finds out she's married, and he's very surprised, he didn't know she was married, and she's just like, yep, surprise, and then she kisses him, and she just gets up and walks away, and I don't know, there's something about that. It's just like he's forcing her. I mean, you know, in his mind, he's pushing away from this relationship or in his story. So,
well, he's justifying his position, I think.
In what way? What do you mean?
I didn't just dive right into it with her because I'm a married man. I had to, like, be honorable to respect my relationship with my wife. But he was fucking around. He's in a marriage, and he's clearly in this affair. I don't know. I thought it was kind of a protective thing that Noah was doing. So, the detective asked about later that night, and I don't know if he meant the night of the crime or the night of that encounter. But Noah,
they're talking about that night, that very night, because it comes up again later with her.
Okay. So Noah says he went to sleep with Helen, and the detective is looking for motive for killing this fella. So we know a guy who got killed is the part of the crime anyway.
Right.
Wasn't a woman.
But he apologized. He said that he apologized to his father-in-law for that outburst he had that we just discussed, and then he went to sleep with his wife.
So what about the crime, though? Because we know it's a guy, and Noah says, I thought it was an accident, and the detective kind of smirks at him when he says that, like, yeah, right, buddy, you thought it was an accident.
Right.
So we know it's a guy, and it's somehow the detective is thinking it's more than just an accident, that there's a motive or some sort of reason behind a motive to kill this guy.
Right.
We don't know who the guy is. We don't know what the motive is. We don't know what happened.
No, we just found out it was a guy who's dead for whatever reason. So then we flash back to Noah, and he's walking back up to the gate, and Allison's still standing there.
That's after part two. Allison's sign comes up, though, right?
Mm-mm. No, this is still before. Yeah. And she apologizes and says she's sorry. She didn't know his wife's birthday, because that's how they got in, as he was trying to open the gate to get out for them to go walking on the beach. And she's like, are you sure you know the code? And he said, yeah, it's my wife's birthday. So they had said that going out. And then coming back up, she's just left standing there.
So the story he left, the way he ended the story with the detective, is not the way the story really ended. Because he sees Allison again at the gate and a kiss and whatever else happens. And then we see part two, Allison. She's riding her bike again, her girly bike.
Mm-hmm.
And here's where we start to get a lot of clues, Michelle, that are very, very, they're important, but they don't reveal anything. Okay, so let's just go through it. So she's riding her bike. She sees Will, this guy Will, on a boat. She goes to pick up something from the dock.
Yeah, some fish, some fresh fish.
A big fish. First of all, who's Will?
I don't have any idea.
Will, no I had idea. First thing I did was look and see if he was one of the brothers, like a fifth brother or something, right. But he's not. He's just this guy that she knows. And he gives his condolences, like, you know, you know, because of the son's birthday again, he kind of gives his respect for that.
Well, yeah, and we're also thinking that maybe he hasn't seen her in a little bit or something, because he tells her that she looks better, and does she look better because she has a little skip in her step, because she has this little romance thing going on with Noah, or does she look better because time's passed and she really looks better? I mean, why? And then he points out that his mother sends her love, and she's been praying for Allison and Cole.
Yeah.
And she looks distraught over him saying that.
Well, that could just be because it's a day or two after the birthday of the
Absolutely.
Son.
Absolutely. But, you know, she talks about at various points trying to get past, and that Cole has been able to get past and move on and have some joy and whatever. Everybody brings this up to her, in her story anyway, just constantly.
All right, but let's focus in on the important stuff of the crime here, because somehow this guy, Will, is on a boat from which she is purposely going to pick something up in a cooler. It's presented as being a big catch of fish. She picks up the cooler. It's heavy. She puts it on her bike, and she rides her bike past an ominous-looking dead-end sign, where the train track literally has the bumper that's the end of the train track. Must be the very tip of Montauk, the very tip of Long Island. And there's a train station, and she goes inside and gives the cooler to Caleb. Caleb's the brother that we just talked about, that is kind of the fourth brother,
right?
Cole's brother. And he's in this office of, it looks like a train station, but he's not like the conductor. He's not taking tickets. He's doing something else. And she gives him the cooler. He takes it back into a back room and comes back out with the cooler again, which appears to have been transferred to a, you know, it's like a different cooler, or something else is in the cooler. And he's casual about the door being locked. So she says, "Didn't Cole ask you to keep that door locked?" And I put this down as huge clue number one. So whatever was in that fish cooler was exchanged for something. Like, they're transporting something on that boat into the train station, and she's putting on the appearance of it being fish. Caleb is dismissive about the warning about the door. Like, well, it's early. Who's going to stop by anyway? And but then he does close the door, and it really is a fortified door. It's not just a simple door at a train station. It's got a coded lock thing on it. And he then says a message, radio message, to somebody, and he says it's go time, which is also very ominous. And then another message, "Leave me alone, Bailey. I'm very happy." So who the hell is Bailey? So what's going on here, Michelle? What's your take?
Okay, the detective, I think it was the detective, is calling her Mrs. Bailey. So I think maybe Bailey might be her maiden name. Caught that. Maybe. And you know how people will call people by their last names if they've known them their whole lives and everything. So that didn't really ring that odd to me.
Can you confirm that you heard the detective call her Allison Bailey or Bailey?
Mrs. Bailey is what he called her. I wrote down, I believe, at the very end of episode, it was at some point, he called her Mrs. Bailey, because I wrote that down because I thought that was her last name. You know, as I was going through just figuring out names.
But it wouldn't be Mrs. Bailey if Cole was her first husband. She'd be Miss Bailey.
Well, right.
Mrs. Whatever their name is, Hart.
I'll have to find where, but he did say Mrs. Bailey, because I wrote that down. So Bailey didn't, you know, ring that odd to me. I just thought I didn't know she got anything back from him, because when she was putting it up there, it was heavy. And then when she got it down, when she got it back, it seemed light. I had no idea that there was a taxi service sign above where they were, and the whole interaction was weird. I had no idea who Will was, who Will's mother was, why this was her job to go get whatever she got and take it where she was taking it. And
Yeah, it could have been empty. It could have been like something in the cooler that came from the boat that got delivered to Caleb. He empties it into the strong room, gives her back the empty cooler. But it's a train station. I mean, they have taxi service at the train station, clearly, because that's people come.
Right. Right, but that was the sign close to the door, not over the door, but right there close to the door. I don't know.
But don't why would if it, okay? So the obvious thing is, it's like because they're always smoking pot and they're always getting high and stuff. Like Will has a boat; he's bringing in pot to people on Montauk and selling. They're selling pot. Okay, so why is that such a big deal? That I guess it could be. I guess it could be a business. They're short of money. They're always short of money. They're trying to make money by selling jam and doing horseback rides and.
Right.
So maybe they have this smuggling pot business into Montauk. But what's go time and why? I don't know. Like what? This seems deeper than that. It seems more serious and more ominous than, you know, a pound of pot getting shipped in on a cooler.
Well, yeah, you're right. And for them to have that kind of lock on the door and her to remind him that Cole wanted the door locked, you wouldn't lock up fish. And I don't know.
And why would he call her Bailey? I don't know. That the name has something to do with it, too, in context of this whole mysterious. And why? Okay. And why is the pot smuggling business at the train station? Why don't you just have a candy, like the, you know, have a benign business somewhere? Why is it the train station? Because a real train showed up and real people were coming in on the train.
Right. The summer people were coming in. Well, we don't know that it's a pot. I don't know. You've seen farther than I have, but
no,
I don't know.
I don't know what it is.
I just don't know what it is. I don't know.
But why would you have it at the real is he really the train ticket salesman?
I mean, well, he didn't even look like a train ticket salesman. He was sitting there. Did you notice he was reading Bruce Butler's book?
But he's at the train station.
Yeah,
there's
I know.
Nobody else. There's nowhere else to go. If you get off that train, you're going to walk right up to him.
Well, there might be other offices or something. This just might be one.
That's all it was. She parked her bike at the front door and walked in, and that's all it was. It's like, do you think he's like, hey, welcome to Montauk. Want some pot? You know, first people off the train.
Well, the people weren't even coming in there anyway. They were completely ignoring him and walking past the office. So I don't know.
All right, so that's a mystery. So Allison / Bailey, whatever, laments the loss of Noah because it seemed like she thought he was leaving with his family. Like all the people who come to Montauk, it's transitory, right? It's summery. They come for 2 weeks or a month or a couple months, and then they go back home.
Right.
So at this point, she seems to not know that, or maybe he is gone. I don't know, but she.
No, he's not gone.
She goes back into work and finds Oscar in his office. And then here's more suspicious looking stuff. Oscar's the owner of the restaurant where she works, and his office / apartment, I guess, is kind of above and behind it to pick up her check. And they don't have her check on the wall, so she has to go get it from him. And Jane's check isn't on the wall. She has to come up there, too. So they're making it pretty clear that they have money problems. They want to split a coffee.
Well, yeah, they talk about it later, too. So, yeah, it's for sure that there's definitely some financial issues going on. Just to point out, Oscar doesn't live there. That's just his office. But he's sleeping there because his wife, Elaine, has kicked him out again.
But
I don't know if that'll become important or not. But
he's got something going on in there, like a girl in there or something illegal in there, because he doesn't want them to come in. He shuts the door on them.
Right.
So I know it's not his house, but he's like doing something more than just an office there.
You would think, yeah.
So he offers a catering job over at Bruce the writer's house to either of them, and Jane snaps it up. I don't know. We went through that pretty quickly, but do you think we caught up to what, did we represent the story accurately there?
Yeah. I mean, as much as we can possibly know, we don't know anything else. So I think we told what we saw, and I love it like this, by the way. So
we didn't see where she started her bike ride to go out to the dock to Will's boat. We didn't see Cole sending her from the ranch or she coming from her house. She was just riding her bike around and all of a sudden she's picking up this cooler.
Right.
So I don't know. It was weird.
It was weird. I thought that whole scene, that whole interaction was weird.
So it gets a little bit more weird. So Allison meets her sister-in-law, Mary Kate, at the house. She's packing up the jams and smoking pot. There's more pot there.
Mm-hmm.
Mary Kate says that Hal wanted a threesome with the au pair. I don't know why that got into the conversation, but...
Well, I think it's to show, in her mind, in Allison's mind, Mary Kate asked her if she's ever had a threesome, and she's like, no, you know, and so I think it's to show that Mary Kate, or that Allison is kind of innocent again, as far as she hasn't done anything like the stuff that she's maybe fixing to get into.
So Mary Kate's been introduced to this more subversive side of the Cole family brother drug importing business or whatever. Mary Kate's more in the know than Allison is.
I don't know if she's more in the know. I didn't even think about drugs until you said it tonight, so I got to let that settle in for a minute. But yeah, Mary Kate is kind of, you know, she's like, I got no role models for this kind of stuff because she you know, doesn't even have anybody she can talk to about that. So,
yeah. So anyway, we go back to the farmer's market and Noah shows up again. It's almost an exact replay. There's Mary Kate and Allison and Noah and his daughter.
Yeah, but it was different. There were some differences. In Noah's account, he reluctantly went up because his daughter led the way. And in this one, he was very happy to be up there and says he's been looking for her. That's right. What she remembers. So it's subtle, but I think it's important.
And so he buys. So the little girl wants the jam again, so he buys everything they have. He wants one of each. And it's now $8 a jar, and it used to be $12 that first time.
Right. He remembers it being very expensive, and she remembers it being $8. And $8 is still not cheap, but, you know.
So why do you think that number changed, the dollar per jar?
Because I think in his mind, he's some kind of... He's the summer people. He's the guy with the money. So he's like, yes, I can give $12 to these people who are, you know, toiling away and doing their wares here at the farmer's market. And I think he feels, I don't know.
So you just think it's a difference in perspective, not in reality?
Well, no. I mean, it is. It has to be a difference in reality in one of them. I mean, because one of them's not telling the truth, but if he's lying, and we're assuming he is with this situation, then it's for a feeling of superiority that I can pay $12 and I offered her the whole 20 when he's already told his kid that they don't have, you know, the kind of, you know, they're not rich, but he's offering her extra money for jam.
I think he's trying to be like, he's trying to impress them, like, oh yeah, keep the 20. I'll support you guys in your little jam hobby business.
Yeah, I know. And also in Noah's story, he bought one jar of jam, but in Allison's story, he bought five. But we also need to point out here that Mary Kate, she's kind of flirting with him in Allison's version of it. And then when he walks away, she says, he wants one of us. And Allison points out, she goes, he's married. And Mary Kate says, like that ever stopped anybody.
Yeah.
So I think that's important stuff, how we keep seeing that kind of stuff come up from different people. So.
Well, back at the horse ranch, Loose Hips Whitney shows up. She slinks in with her hot car to pick up Martin, her little brother.
Yeah.
And she starts flirting with Scotty, the brother. Scotty gets in trouble for flirting with underage Whitney because she is 15 or 16, but he defends it by saying he's drumming up the extra needed cash, the extra business. Like, she might be a customer for the horse rides. Kind of bullshit.
Yeah. And how old is Scotty? Do we know?
He's older than her. He's probably 18. He's probably legal age, and she's not legal age.
See, I think he's older. He's got to be older than that, because if the mom grew up with four boys, he's got to be closer to the mom's age than he is to the daughter's age.
Well, he's older. He's old enough to know that he's doing something wrong by flirting with a 16-year-old girl.
Right.
So here comes more. Here comes the real gist of the crime. So Cole and Allison talk, and they have a very crime-laden conversation. Cole says, "How was the pickup this morning?" Allison says, "Fine." Cole says, "No incidents." And Allison says, "No." So they're not talking about fish. You don't ask how the pickup was and is there any problem with it, unless you're talking about something that you could get in trouble for.
Okay, see, I thought it had something to do, because when he brought up that his mother was praying for them, she was very not happy with that. And so I thought it might have had something to do with her son. I don't know. I just didn't. I completely see your point of view. And now that you've said it, I think you're right. But that is not what I was thinking at all. I was thinking it had more to do with their kid at that point.
Yeah, the praying for them. When Will said, Will's playing two parts here. He's playing a criminal of some sort of smuggling import. That's one thing. But he's also her old friend from old childhood days. And he's like saying, "Hey, my mom says prayers for you for your son's birthday, who died however he died." I think those both can be happening at the same time.
Yeah, but I think it's confusing in this context, considering we don't have any idea what's going on.
I don't know. I think criminals can still be friends. Like, "Hey, you know, here's this heroin. Sell it. But hey, how you doing with this being your son's birthday, who died a year ago?"
Well, of course. Of course.
I think that's what it was. But Cole and Allison's conversation here is strictly about something illicit. How was the pickup? It went okay. And there were no incidents. No, that is not about jam or fish or, you know, saltwater taffy. It's about some sort of money-making criminal enterprise that they have.
But why would they be cash-strapped if they were selling?
Because they don't have enough customers for their. I mean, they just are. I mean, it's a horse ranch, Michelle.
Not for the horse ranch. I get that. But why would they be cash-strapped if they're drug dealers or whatever?
Every drug dealer's cash-strapped.
They are?
Yeah. They're not making enough money, you know. That's why they do it. If you weren't cash-strapped, you wouldn't be in the drug business.
Okay.
Right? I mean,
I can run with that.
So anyway, Cherry and Allison then talk, and she praises, Cherry's the mom of the whole brood of the Cole and the brothers. She praises her strength, that Allison's strength for holding up through all this. So Cherry's going to clean all the rooms in the house so they can have a baby and move there and start over, and kind of paints this picture of great happiness in the future. Unrealistically, it's very unrealistic in the context of the scene.
Well, yeah, and Allison ends up comforting her, which is not good. And then when she talks about being able to move in because she'll need help the next time around or something, if she decides to have a baby, Allison just looks like she's been slapped.
Right.
So I don't know what's going on with
her. It's a little heavy-handed of mother-in-law to say, "Try again and have another baby and we'll be okay this time." It's like, that's not her call.
Well, when you're 6-year-old, because that's how old Gabriel, the son, was, right?
I think it was 4. It was 2008 to 2012.
Oh, okay.
But whatever, it's not her call to even suggest that, I don't think.
No.
So Allison rides her bike home and recalls to the detective that she had very few friends at this point, and that she had to be strong for her family, because if they knew what I was thinking, they'd be terrified of me. So what was she thinking?
Yeah, I don't know.
Suicide, murder, having another baby, having an affair. What was she thinking?
I don't know. I think we're going to have to find out what happened to her child, and then what this incident is, what the crime was.
And what the smuggling operation is.
Whoa.
There's a lot of stuff.
Right.
So Allison rides her bike home, and she gets home and she takes the catering job with Jane alongside of Jane.
Well, yeah, she stands outside her house, and she doesn't want to go in. And that's incredibly telling. That's incredibly, incredibly telling. I don't know if any females will resonate with this, but, you know, standing outside your home and you don't want to go in, that's big. And I thought they played that very well.
Yeah, I didn't pick up on that as much as you did, but they get to the party and they both look really great in their black serving outfits. And they're serving single Moët champagne flukes, these weird looking bottles that have, they're like single serving, like a beer bottle of champagne.
Yeah, with a little, like a little funnely thing on top. Is that what that was? What was it?
I guess. I've never had champagne that way. It seems very un-green-like to have each champagne serving in its own bottle.
How did you know what it was?
Because it said Moët on the bottle.
Oh, okay. That's a good way. Okay.
She spots McNulty and his wife arguing at the party.
And it's very different, let's point out, than his recollection of his conversation with his wife at the party.
How is it different?
It's much nastier. She sees him go to grab her hand or to say something, and she sees Helen jerk away from Noah and say something ugly to him, and we haven't seen her respond that way to Noah, Helen respond that way to Noah at all. It was a really ugly little interaction that she saw between Helen and Noah.
I agree with you. I'm just wanting your take on it. So then Grandma comes up and she asks Allison about the witch lady and, you know, what do you think of that old bag over there, that witch-looking lady? And then she starts to remember her from the paper as the mom who lost the son.
Right. This is when I kind of liked her.
Grandma?
Yeah, I kind of liked her because she was talking to the help. I mean, you know, Allison's the help. And she was talking to her like a friend. And she was laughing with her. And then she reached out and touched her face, and she goes, "Oh, dear, you're the girl who lost the baby." And she's just so, she really connects with her on that level. And then she's like, "You have to take care of yourself, eat well, exercise, and if you need Valium, let me know, or Xanax, or whatever she said." But, I mean, she was very likable. And then she offers her $1,000 to go spill a drink on her husband.
Yeah.
I like that, too.
Well, it was interesting to me that the exchange between the advice from the mothers-in-law, because first we saw Cole's mother give Allison advice, and then Helen's mother, right in a row, right scene after scene, next to each other. But that grandma, like her mother-in-law is rotten fruit, man. She's scowling. She's unhappy. She's gonna pay to spill wine on somebody. That's just negative. She's so negative.
No, it's great. It's great. I love that. For her husband who was out there with his mistress at her house? Are you kidding?
Well, tell her to leave. Why?
No, cheers to her. I loved that. I was so glad she did that. She was likable. She was human at that point, and we hadn't seen her that way before.
All right. So Allison endures some more childlike events. She has to serve Helen, go get me a thin slice of cake and a drink, and then she fixes her dress like she's a little girl.
And Helen Helen was very
nice. She was nice about
it. She wasn't nice to her. She was like, "Oh dear, could you possibly bring me some water with no ice and a little sliver of cake? Oh, and honey, come here, let me fix this for you." I mean, she was very condescending.
But she wasn't trying to be mean. You know, she wasn't trying to, wasn't like, "I know you're my husband's concubine, I'm going to pick on you." She was
Of course not. But this is Allison's view of Helen versus Noah's view of Helen. And Allison doesn't have the same high view of Helen that Noah is showing us. That's all I was
pointing out. She's very privileged. Like, she's
perfect.
She gets everything she wants the way she wants it.
Yes.
All right. So Allison catches Scotty pre-raping Whitney, pretty much, taking her upstairs to do whatever.
And, what is going on there?
Well, I think this family of Cole's brothers is a group of criminals, they're not, you know, they're wholesome looking, but they're up to some no good.
Okay.
Second time they told Scotty to not to fuck around with an underage girl, and here he's like leading her by the hand up the stairs.
And should you have to tell an adult man not to do that?
Well, no. But
okay, that's it. I mean, we shouldn't even have to be telling him that. He should see that.
So
that was ugly.
McNulty finds this whole scene, he walks in on it, and he gets Allie to, he shuts it down. I mean, they shut it down themselves, like, oh shit, we got caught. But he then jumps right into Allie, like, hey, let's go and go out back, or let's get away from here.
Yeah, right, because, you know, it's not like Whitney could possibly come back and find Scotty again if
right.
Dad doesn't watch her just a little bit, but he's more concerned with getting Allison alone.
Or so. Just, ooh, that was a close one. My daughter almost got raped by this guy. Now I'll just go out and have fun with this girl.
Right.
Like, it's a little dismissive of, like, this the depth of how serious that was.
Absolutely.
So next we admit, and I put this down as huge clue number two, that Allison can't swim. Allison says she can't swim for a girl who lives on Montauk and, you know, whatever.
Right. That was weird, too.
So Noah questions her about the sex in the driveway with Cole and says, like, married people don't fuck like that. What's up with that?
And this is where she says marriage means different things to different people. This is her version of when she said that. Very different than his version of when she said marriage means different things to different people.
And this is where I put down huge clue number three. She says, I used to put him above myself. Now I just hope I don't kill him. Which makes me think about the crime and who got killed and how did it happen and why did it happen. But she literally says that. I just hope I don't kill him.
Right.
All right. So Noah describes his intro with Helen, that they were married before college, and says, I still love her. Noah and Allie have been thinking about each other. So I don't know. What do you think about that?
Well, yeah, he goes into the whole spiel, his whole college spiel, which we've heard before, which was pretty, you know, pretty accurate. And he talked about that he loved her. And then, you know, he says that he still loves her, but he wished he had waited. And then he's sitting there, and now this is her take on it, but he starts talking about time travel and what would happen if you could travel back in time and make a different decision, but your life would split off into a parallel universe, and you could kind of live both lives. And that really touched her. You could tell it was like one of those decision-making things for a girl that a guy says that's like, okay, you know, you've convinced me. And
he's painting a picture that cannot ever be true, that she wants to be true. Like, I can have everything. I can have my husband, I can have my affair, and it's all okay because we lead parallel lives. Nobody gets hurt. I don't know. It's like, it can't be that way.
Well, yeah. I think he's offering her an out. He's offering her something with that statement. And I thought the statement was the crux of what decided for her. I saw the decision in her eyes, kind of. And maybe I was reading into it. Who knows? But he stops and he looks at her for a long time. And that's when he says he's been thinking about her all week. And then he sits there and he's really vulnerable. And he says, have you been thinking about me? And she says, she has.
Of course.
And so he says, so what do we do now? And she said, I want you to kiss me.
Right. So even though it's her version, right?
Yeah, this is her version, which is completely different.
She admits that it's not just him pursuing me and me being chased. Like, I wanted part of it, too.
Oh, yeah. Yeah, definitely. But like I said, I think that last statement, that parallel life statement, the parallel universe kind of swayed her. Because you could kind of see this little thing click in her eyes where she went, Okay.
Well, life is a flat circle, after all.
So then they make out just a little, and then they just stop.
And then we see Ellie with the detective, like, in the room with the detective in her severe black dress again.
Mm-hmm.
And she says some more telling clues. I really doubt it was anyone at the party who ran him down.
Right.
Everyone at the party was local. The road where he got run down was headed towards a club. So the person who got run down was a male, and he was run down by a car. So that's how the crime happened. I think that's probably the crime we're talking
right.
about.
I agree.
And then she says, I'll do anything to help find out what happened. I can't believe he's gone. So that makes me think it's somebody close to her, not just some schmuck in town like Will. But maybe it's, I don't know. Who do you think it is, Michelle?
I think it might be Oscar.
Oscar?
Yeah, I think it might be Oscar.
Why?
I don't know. I don't know because he's local and we don't find out here, but in the next episode we find out that he's having some conflict about wanting to build some stuff, and I just think it might be him because, you know, he gets in a fight with the husband and all that stuff's coming up, but I don't know. That's just who I think. Who do you think?
Well, I was setting the stage for you to step in and say what you texted me like somewhere like 3 or 4 days ago. Do you think it's Cole?
Well, I thought it was Cole at first, but that was blown out of the water. That's why I was thinking it was Cole back at the beginning when he said him.
Why is it blown out of the water?
I can't remember, but there's some reason now that I don't think it's Cole anymore, but I can't remember. It's just that I completely dismissed Cole.
I think it has to be one of the... I think it has to be a prime member, not Oscar, my guess.
I don't know. I
think
know.
Cole's a good guess.
Well, what about Scotty?
Not a prime member.
Okay. I don't think it's Cole anymore.
Well, then the scene ends, the episode ends. Allie's walking down that very road or some road just like it, right?
Yes, she lied. It's showing that she lied just as much as Noah lied, because the detective asked her where she was staying that night, and she says she drove back to the city. She makes that a point. And that's when she goes, you know, I'll do anything to help. I can't believe he's gone. And then she flashes back to her leaving, and she's walking. She's not driving anywhere, and it's not to the city. It's down a dark road, and there's these hooligans. I mean, they make a point of showing these hooligans driving by and whooping it up at her, and it even scares her. So she lied, too, about where she was that night and what she was doing.
Yeah. I don't know. Maybe the kid that got killed. I don't know. It's weird. Like, the kid got killed somehow. He didn't just die, I don't think.
Yeah, but I mean, how? How did her son die?
Is that a separate event from the crime? And is that a separate event from the he who was ran down?
Well, it has to be a separate event because it's already happened. And, I mean, she's already went to the funeral and all this stuff has happened before this night happened. So, yeah, I mean, I think...
Right. Well, separate event, you're right. But is separate, like it's not connected to her being part of a drug smuggling family or, you know, retribution for something or...
See,
that's
I don't
a lot
know.
Of tragedy to happen randomly to one person.
Well, yeah, and I mean, you know, we've got the surfboard, and you've pointed that out on the top of the car, the surfboard on the gravesite, you know, and the fact that she can't swim, so did something happen to her kid in the water, and she couldn't get to him, and that's why she wants to kill Cole, and why she feels like she does, I don't know.
Yeah,
you know?
I don't think that. Like, she's mad at him, so she wants to kill him.
No, I don't think she actually wants to kill him, but, I mean, did he take Gabriel out surfing and something happened and she couldn't get to him?
Oh, maybe.
I don't know.
Gabriel's only 4, though. Do you surf at 4?
Yeah, you can. I mean, you know, yeah, there's kids that go out and surf that little.
All right.
With adults. And then the ending song of this was called Big Jet Plane. And it's a really great song about a woman who smells of daisies and drives you crazy, and he just wants to take her away. Hmm. Really great song. in context to what we're talking about.
All right. Well, that wraps it up for episode 2 of The Affair. We don't know anything more than we knew going in.
No, we don't.
All right, Michelle, any last thoughts?
I'm thoughtless. Nope.
All right. Well, connect with us at West Coast Project, and we'll talk to you next week on Wednesday. Gonna hold you, gonna kiss you, my